Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out, procrastination, putting it off, kicking the can down the road. In, plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out, carpet in the bathroom. Like, why? In, knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
True North stores have Primo Eats and Pepsi brand products that are heavy on taste and light on your wallet. Right now, buy any Primo sandwich and add a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Handmade every day, Primo uses quality meats and cheeses. Complete the meal with a Pepsi. Grab any Primo sandwich and pair it with a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Get more with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your app store. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
I'm not against Kirk Cousins. It's not about that. I just don't care. If you get him, great. If not, I shouldn't even say great. If you get him, meh. If you don't get him, meh. I don't care. I don't care. I had a lot of people over the last couple of days, what are you doing? You don't want the best possibility they can get? I don't think he's going to make a tremendous difference. However, can I throw some out at you? Can I throw a theory at you and you can throw it right back? I want to play this Albert Breer audio, and I want to throw this audio. I want to throw this theory at you because I'm not sure how you're going to take it, but it's a pretty wild one. And if you don't like it, you might want to make sure I never say it again. But here's Albert Breer on the expectations on if Kirk Cousins lands in Cleveland. This is from yesterday on The Fan.
I think he's got an ability to at least get you to level ground at the position. And I think that'd be what you're looking to do, right? Like, can you get yourself into a spot where you can compete against Joe Burrow and Lamar Jackson in the division? Maybe Aaron Rodgers too, right? We'll see. So, you know, just as far as that goes, I think, you know, it gives you a fighting chance. And then, you know, I think as long as you can stay healthy, it probably brings some stability to a group of skill players who haven't had much. You're going to be able to give them something that, you know, they haven't had for a while. So, you know, if the goal is to kind of, you know, kick the can down the road and not overcommit a quarterback because you don't think that there's one available that you want to go all in this year's draft at the second overall pick, well, then you can get Kirk Cousins and maybe you roll the dice with a, you know, with a quarterback there on day two somewhere.
That was Albert Breer talking about Kirk Cousins. He made me think of something yesterday as I was getting ready to leave Fox 8. I heard a segment by my friend Sean Marash over at WFAN. I'm not going to play that here. I want to play that for Nathan coming up at 9 because it is a very unfair piece of audio about Jameis Winston. And Jameis wrote a great letter to the city of Cleveland in his goodbye yesterday on social media. And he mentions the game against Pittsburgh and the snow and everything. And I go, wait a minute. And if you guys don't like this, turn on your mics and call me stupid. Could that game, well, you'll call me stupid just because, so, but hear me out. Could that game tell me who the real rest of the Browns actually are? It was the last game you won of the season?
The Pittsburgh snow game?
Yes. Yeah. Last game you won of the season. The weather was so bad, the quarterback was inconsequential. Both quarterbacks were very, very bad, if anything. They couldn't provide anything for the football team. And our whole conversation has been, well, what if we got the quarterback? What if we got the quarterback? What have I said? If we want to compete, don't we have to eliminate turnovers to be able to run the football again? So if I'm playing a 10-on-11 game, which it basically became for both teams, Pittsburgh, hey, they're nothing to write home about. I'm not saying that Cleveland becomes, with a proper quarterback, who can at least eliminate some turnovers, even though he led the league in interceptions last year, Kirk Cousins. But a guy who can eliminate some turnovers there and run your offense with efficiency. I'm not pointing out that they are a Super Bowl-bound team. No, 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 no. But they're certainly a hell of a lot better than 3 wins and maybe approaches a wild card if they're able to beat a team like Pittsburgh. Is that so crazy to think? Am I a crazy person? 216-474-0092. Could that game, in the bad weather, because you took out the quarterback for both teams, could that have been the actual litmus test of who the real Browns can be? Still not that great, but certainly not this bad.
Well, I don't... You guys brought this up last week, too, I think.
Did we?
About the win, the win totals, and can they win six or seven games or five games or three games? I think there's a point with Kirk Cousins, especially at quarterback, that if you've got... There was a line drawn last year on when they decided they're going to tank out the rest of the season, and maybe they're not tanking it per se, but they've got to improve their draft positioning.
Yes.
And at some point, they decided they were not trying to get wins anymore. They had to go get a better draft pick, and they ended up with number two. And that came the next week against Denver. When Jameis threw those three picks, two pick sixes, three picks, that was when they said, okay, it's not worth it anymore.
You are so right. Think, yes.
I think there's the same point because it's Kirk Cousins and because he's a veteran and you know he's not the future. If you bring him in and you go, you're 3-6, you go, well, it's not worth it anymore.
Well,
3-7,
yeah.
Maybe.
So you're telling me I have a point.
Yeah.
You see?
I think there's a total point.
Thank you. Am I stupid? 216-474-0092.
I'm telling you're
right.
Stupid, though.
Well, in a lot of things, I kind of am, and I'll shoot my mouth off. But you're not saying I'm dumb on this. You put it in a 10-on-11 scenario because you couldn't really throw the ball in the third through three quarters of that game. So you take out both quarterbacks. Well, if I can't really throw the ball that much, I can't really turn the ball over that too terribly much. So I take him out of it. He had fun. He was doing snow angels, whatever. They were able to put together a drive. They were able to win that game. And I'm thinking, my God, okay, at that point, they got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 games left. Like, I didn't think they were going to be 3-14. I didn't think they were still going to be very good, but I didn't think they were going to be 3-14.
That was the game where they said, we don't know that Jameis isn't the guy yet. Next week in Denver, they found out, he was still young enough that you could have re-signed him maybe and went to the future with him.
He's right. He's right.
They found out in Denver, no, that's
not. He's right. He's exactly right.
He can't be the future.
The weather, I think, in that game.
And that'll be the same thing with Kirk Cousins.
Might have showed you who the real Cleveland Browns are. Now, you have to make a decision for yourselves as fans. Do you or do you not believe that that would be the right way to go? Because say you do get a Kirk Cousins, and you're going to get a quarterback out of the draft. Well, I mean, we have sat here and argued day in and day out about where to take him. I'm not trying to have that argument right now. You're going to get a quarterback somewhere in the draft. But if you got Kirk Cousins and you can go, listen, we're not going to be throwing the ball like crazy. You're back in my offense here. This is what we're going to do. Maybe you get Caleb Johnson out of the draft. Maybe you get another. Maybe you bring back Nick, please. Maybe you're going to have four guys probably in your running back room at some point. You're going to get another tight end. So you get these guys. You try to push them forward. See what type of offense that you can run. Maybe I see a better version of the Cleveland Browns. Then you have to ask yourself, is that worth it? Because I think a lot of people are punting on this draft, and they are fine with not being good next year because it will relieve them of Andrew Berry, Stefanski. DeBodesta's the Wizard of Oz, so he's not going anywhere. I can't. You have Kaiser Soze out there in San Diego, so you don't know where he's going to go. But you have those two guys who will leave the fans who have no trust of those. They're gone. You'll bring in new people, and then you'll get a high draft pick for a quarterback that you probably like better than this class.
Kenny, the thing that I'm nervous about with Cousins is, if you look, he's never been a huge, huge interception guy. It happened last year. What changed last year?
I think the offense a little bit, probably. I think that the pressure on him to perform maybe a little bit. I think that he was probably uncomfortable. I think he tried to play through an injury. That led him. I mean, when you try to play through it, the same thing, there are guys who are great big Zeuses of individuals. And depending on the injury they have, they can still just go through it. I mean, let's look at Mahomes for crying out loud. That's what separates him from the best, because he's a cut above even the best. That Patrick Mahomes has played through an injury each of the last like 5 years by the end of the year. A significant injury that might keep guys out. He's still able to perform at a high level. We remember back in 2021, Baker's shoulder was shot. He needs his whole body. Maybe Kirk, who's not the athlete of Mahomes or Allen or somebody else, maybe you need more of your body. It is a shoulder injury,
but
for crying out loud. Maybe they didn't put him in the best position. I mean, I'm talking myself into it now.
Well,
but you asked me reasons. I'm trying to give you some reasons.
I think we'd be talking ourselves into whoever they end up with.
I tried to talk myself into Kenny Pickett.
So Is it that it is the injury, or is his arm just shot? Because the highlights of him not being able to make basic NFL throws, that just popped up this year. Now, if you're saying it's just because of the injury, the question is he going to...
Is he going to be healed right, enough from the injury to make basic NFL throws again?
Because a lot of guys never. A lot of guys, their careers forever change.
Well, maybe that's why he was in Cleveland. I'm not sure. I'm trying to find... I watched that game. I read that letter from Jameis Winston, and I'm going, huh? Because I thought a lot of people were going, I thought in my mind that we're going to get calls tomorrow or people reading that tomorrow going, why didn't we just bring Jameis back? If we're going to be bad, we might as well be entertained.
It's like we were talking about Flacco before.
Yeah, why didn't we just bring, but I think there was a lot of people going, why aren't you guys talking about Jameis? Why didn't we just bring Jameis back? And I'm going, well, my first answer is always the turnovers. They got to do what they can to eliminate turnovers, which both those guys turn the ball over. You have to do what you can to eliminate those, because that's why you lost a bunch of games. Turnovers are just a killer in so many ways. And if you don't have a quarterback that is Mahomes or Allen or the guys we always talk about, they're not good enough to get over the turnovers, so you don't want to take those chances. If I have Cousins, then does the rest of my team look more like the ground pounders that we've had in the past that are able to push the ball forward, get 5 yards a carry, get 4.5 yards a carry even without Nick Chubb, be able to keep a defense honest, get me the 2 possessions in the fourth quarter and win a game on the margins like they did in 2020, like they did in 2023, save some of Joe Flacco's interceptions. And a couple of teams they played, yeah, I know that they weren't very good at the end of the year and maybe they were getting ready to get blown out. There is a possibility of that truth. But did I see who the Browns could really be? The real Cleveland Browns in that game, they are not an AFC championship team. Are they a borderline playoff team? Maybe, because Pittsburgh's a borderline up or down playoff team at that moment. And right now they are. So if I'm able to beat them in that setting, maybe that game exposed to me, okay, they're not going to be world beaters, but this is certainly a much better team than what they showed towards the end of the year. We were all down. We're all upset. We're all mad about how this has gone. But maybe that's the real deal of what I have right there, which is not too bad, which will give you some hope.
Well, I do feel like there is at least a better chance if maybe he is actually healthy. Maybe it was all the shoulder situation last year. I do think there would be a chance that some things could come together where they could get off to a good start and then it changes the complexion of their year. I don't think that's the case with like Carson Wentz. I think if they went and got Carson Wentz, they would just be bad. I think if Kenny Pickett starts at the beginning of the year, I do think there is a chance for an all-time bad Brown season.
Wentz gives me nothing. Kenny Pickett, I can go, well, he's still young and we'll see him in a better offense. I'm talking myself into it.
I get it. Because he just hasn't started enough games for you to truly close the book on him, you always have some hope over a guy who was drafted in the first round. But I don't have a huge confidence with any of that. So that's why with Cousins, I can, for the first time, I've always, since we've been talking about Kirk Cousins, you've seen me hemming and hawing and rolling my eyes. But I will say there is a chance. There is a chance that he's healthy again and he can look somewhat like Kirk Cousins from a few years ago, which means you could win some football games. You absolutely could win football games with that. Would I bet any amount of money on it? No, I'm not.
Is that good for this team, though?
Well, that's up to the fan. Because you would win just enough games to not get a high draft pick and to keep Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry employed.
Well, that's what it's only good for one guy, and that's Andrew Berry. I don't even know that it's Kevin's a factor in it.
So then you have to ask yourself if Kirk Cousins is worth it to you. Waiting on an answer out there.
It's brutally tough because it's almost impossible for me to see a Browns team with Kirk Cousins getting in the playoff scenario, getting past Buffalo, Kansas City. But that's going to be the case with almost everybody.
Dane's a local.
That's a hard part of this.
I know Dane's national. He's from The Athletic. He's a big-time national guy. That's why we're excited to have him on next. But he is a local guy, and I know he's a draft guy, so I think I'm going to know his answer to the question. I want to know if it's worth it to him for a franchise to be 9-8 or 10-7 this coming year. Because that would be, I think, the absolute ceiling for Kirk Cousins. 216-474-0092. We got Dane Brugler right now from The Athletic on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline. Dane, first question to you. We were just arguing about this because I thought, man, maybe that game against Pittsburgh, maybe it was different because you took the quarterback out of the equation. You remember that game, Dane? It was snowing that Thursday night.
Oh, yeah. And I go, yeah, never be able to forget that one, yeah.
Yeah, I said, you take the quarterback out of the equation on both of those teams. Pittsburgh, they're a middle-of-the-road team. The Browns beat them. And I'm thinking, man, if you get somebody and just complete some passes, be decent, take care of the football, don't turn it over, you could be decent. But you're a draft guy. Is it worth it to be a 9-win team in 2025, knowing what the next draft is going to be? And also, for a lot of fans, because they don't necessarily trust the front office or the coaching staff, that would be certainly enough wins to keep people employed.
Yeah, and I think there's, it's human nature, right, to have some sense of self-preservation. You know, you want to have your cake and eat it too, meaning you want to put yourself in position in future years to be drafting you know, the best players, but at the same time, you want to win on Sundays. And like, this is an organization that is striving to build and maintain a culture, and you do that by winning. And so it's a really tricky proposition to put yourself in position where you're going to lose games to hopefully get a quarterback next off season when you need to win games. You have to put the product on the field. And, you know, I think there's different ways to go about drafting a quarterback or finding the right quarterback. It's not as simple as let's tank, let's get the number one pick. And like, this team has done that before, right? We've been down that road, and that doesn't mean that it's not the right way to go, but I don't, just looking towards next year, I'm not saying like, there's not a Caleb Williams. There's not a Drake May. There's not a clear cut, hey, we have this quarterback out there for next year where if we just lose enough games, we're going to be in good spot. So this is a team that is still good enough to win games, still good enough to compete, and they have to be realistic about their quarterback options. And, you know, I think they are. Whether that ends up being Kirk Cousins, whether that ends up being, a rookie from this class, is it an optimal situation? No. But it's just the reality of the situation. So, no, I think they need to attack this offseason as if, hey, we're going to go in, we're going to compete, we're going to win games, and see where the chips fall.
Dane Brugler with us. So, obviously, every draft question when you're a Browns fan is going to be, is the quarterback good enough that's going to be available? Right now, are we under the assumption, Dane, that there will not be a trade up, that number one overall will be Cam Ward?
That is certainly the way that it feels like we're going. You know, I think the Titans are in an interesting spot where you have a first-year general manager who's coming into a situation where, you know, the Titans earned the number one overall pick. They have that pick for a reason. So, obviously, they have a need at quarterback, but, you know, they're a younger team, and so there's a thought, well, just build up the roster, and then we'll find the quarterback along the way. But if you love Cam Ward enough, then that should be the pick. And it certainly seems like that's the way the Titans are leaning, at least, you know, here we are 3 weeks from the draft.
So then if that is the case, you know, everything boils down to whether or not the Browns actually have a legitimate, you know, top of the first round grade on Shador. A lot of rumors and speculation that they don't. And after the combine, all I could hear were rumors about executives having drinks in Indy and sharing their real thoughts and saying, man, he's a second-round grade. What have you heard, and has there really been movement, or is all that noise? Are people, you know, the real executives, have they wavered at all on Shador?
I don't know. I've been pretty consistent with my thoughts on Shador, and I think they match up pretty closely with how a lot of teams view Shador, and that's just he's a good quarterback, just not one that I think you necessarily draft in the top five. You know, I don't think he's a guy that's going to elevate the offense around you. I think he can come in and, like, what's the best case scenario for Shador? Is it maybe a Brock Purdy? Like, maybe that's absolute best case. And you know, there's no guarantee he would get to that level. So, you know, I think it'd be a big swing to draft him number two overall and expect him to come in, elevate everybody around you, make the offense, you know, clearly better, and help you compete for the playoffs. I think it's not only that you're making that pick early, but you're also missing out on some of these other top prospects that are on your board So if you miss on that, it's not just you're missing on the quarterback, but you're also missing out on a chance at Abdul Carter or Travis Hunter, or whichever way they go. This is a light draft at the top. The Browns are in a lucky situation where they have the number two pick. There's a good chance they will have their option of the top non-quarterback in this draft. And this is a draft where it's Abdul Carter and Travis Hunter at the top, and then there's a drop-off and a lot of question marks after that. So I think, you know, yeah, it would have been better if the Browns had a number one pick in, say, last year's draft with when you have multiple quarterbacks. Sure. But at least in this draft, they're in a spot where it's a light class in terms of the top five, but they're in a position to draft one of the premier non-quarterbacks available.
Dane Brugler, author of The Beast. It gets released April 9th. It's the largest draft guide he's ever done. He's a senior NFL draft analyst from The Athletic. All right, Dane, could we be or is this kind of chewing hot air, chewing the fat, whatever, about the draft right now?
I'm Rhett.
And I'm Link.
And we're the hosts of the podcast Ear Biscuits. We're just two lifelong friends who've been talking about life for a long time.
From being dads to businessmen to all the random things we experience, nothing is off limits.
And now we're talking to you. We're answering your questions, giving advice that you may or may not want to take, and listening to your hilarious stories.
So leave us a voicemail to be part of the show at
1-888-EARPOD1 on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, where I'm hearing some pundits kind of wondering right now whether or not Jackson Dart could actually go ahead of Shedeur Sanders in this draft. Is that a possibility?
Sure. Yeah, I don't think that's crazy. I think we've been so, locked in on, oh, Shedeur is going to go third or this. But, okay, let's just say that Shedeur does not go top three. The Browns don't take him. The Giants don't take him. Where does Shedeur Sanders fall? I don't think he's probably not going top 10. And so, you know, do the Steelers make that move? Even if they bring in Aaron Rodgers, I think that there's a couple wild card teams once you get to the teens and the 20s. But then once you get to that area, that's when we're talking about Jackson Dart territory as well. And so, and we also talk about the teams at the top of the second round, the Browns, the Giants, who could potentially trade back into one to get one of those quarterbacks. So yeah, if Shedeur falls out of the top three, I think there's a lot of different outcomes that are possible. And one of those would be Jackson Dart going ahead of him. And Jackson Dart's he's a good quarterback. He's toolsy. He's coming from an offense where he's just going to be asked to do a lot of things in the NFL that he wasn't asked to do at Ole Miss. And so that's the disconnect for me with Jackson Dart. He's a really talented player, but it's not that he can't do some of these things. It's just we haven't seen them on tape. You know, there are times where maybe he gets that backside read, but not consistently. He's not going through progressions. He doesn't have to anticipate consistently in that offense. So there are just some things that it's going to take some time for Jackson Dart. But if you really focus on the tools and the competitiveness and everything he brings intangible wise, I could see a team really falling for him in that late first round. And Shedeur could realistically still be available at that point.
It seems that you're not very enthralled with the quarterback class, and if you were the Browns, you would just go to next year.
100%. I mean, there's this, and the big reason why is this is the first year that I can ever remember that we don't have a third-year junior quarterback. We just don't have that guy this year. Last year, Caleb, J.J. McCarthy, Drake May, year before, C.J. Stroud was a third-year guy when he came out. Bryce Young, Anthony Richard, like every year we have those really talented third-year juniors. Every year we've had one. This year, it's the first time I can remember where we don't have that guy, and that is really kind of leaving a hole in this draft of the talented quarterbacks that can get you excited.
Dane Brugler from The Athletic with us right now. I'm hearing the term more in the last week than I, quite frankly, heard all last year about generational talent. And I've heard it now thrown around for Abdul Carter and Travis Hunter. If these guys, if it were a different year, would we be saying that about them as generational talent? Or are we only saying it right now because this draft doesn't necessarily have the blue chippers and certainly doesn't have the quarterbacks of other drafts?
Yeah, I can't stand that word. I mean, when it comes to draft prospects, it has no meaning. It really doesn't. It's overused. It's irrelevant to me. I think it's when you – let's just compare these two guys to – let's put them in last year's draft. Obviously, the three quarterbacks are still going 1, 2, 3. And then, you know, there's still a good chance Marvin Harrison goes 4 and Joe Alt goes 5 and Malik Nabers goes 6. And so, you know, are these guys really generational talents if they wouldn't have been top 5 picks in last year's draft? So, you know, like they're very, very good. And especially when you Travis Hunter and just how unique he is. We don't see players like this very often. And Abdul, like I think it's like Myles Garrett when he was coming out. If you wanted to peg him as a generational talent, I would not have argued. I mean, he was so different, traits wise, production wise. Just he had everything coming out. I mean, he was the fact that he was the number one overall pick when there were several quarterbacks available and nobody batted an eye just tells you everything you need to know about Myles Garrett when he was coming out. Abdul Carter is a really good player, absolutely. But if you know, a quarterback like a Caleb Williams or something like that was in this draft, he's still that the quarterback's still going to go over him. So I don't know if I'm necessarily attaching that word to either of these two players, but it doesn't mean that they're not very, very good prospects.
Later rounds, or I should say mid to later rounds, you know, start on day 2 Friday, you know, pick 33, things like that. What would be your game plan for the Browns as they approach that position wise, maybe? And maybe can you give us some names?
Well, okay, who are they going to take at 2 then? Are we going to say they take Abdul Carter?
Yeah, say they take Abdul Carter, number 2, yep.
Okay, well, I mean, I think the quarterback is obviously still in play. If they, you know, how many quarterbacks will end up going in the first round? And if Tyler Shuck from Louisville, do they like him enough for him to be in contention at 33? Someone that you can bring in and, you know, a young talent can compete. I think that is at least on the table. I really think they need another pass catcher in this mix, whether that's coming as a second tight end, whether that's going to be one of these receivers. Could Emeka Ebuka still be on the board at 33? I love that fit. I mean, Ebuka is one of those guys that is not great at any one thing, but he's just good across the board. He's above average across the board as a route runner, speed, even as a blocker. I mean, he will get after it. But, you know, he's not that true number one that I think teams are going to be pushing them over themselves to make sure they get him in round one. So if a guy like Ebuka was there at 33, I'd love that. If they want to address the offensive line, you know, I think that's the offensive line for the Browns is currently, you know, you're kind of piecing it together. You know, what's DeJuan Jones going to look like? Jack Conklin's obviously, you know, not he's long in the tooth and you just don't know if you're going to get him for 17 games. You know, and that's more of a short term option anyways. So, you know, a guy like Ariante Ursary from Minnesota is a guy that I think could be in the mix there at 33. He's a really talented player, needs some work, but I think you're excited about what he's going to look like next year, 2 years from now, and down the road for the future. So pass catcher, I want to see him get him a little bit better on the offensive line as well. To me, those would be kind of the focus that I'd be looking at 33.
Dane, just a random question since I got a chance to do a few of his games in college. Harold Fannin Jr. Seems like he did himself no favors at the combine. What did you see? What kind of buzz is he generating? Because during the season, people were talking about him as a first-round pick. Now I'm not really hearing that.
No, and I don't think he ever was a first-round pick. He was always kind of like a third-round pick, and that's nothing to sneeze at. I mean, that's you know, we're talking about a potential day two pick, potential top 100 guy. I mean, you can't argue with the production. 117 catches, over 1,500 yards. He did some things this year that you just don't see tight ends do, and he's still young. He's 20 years old. He won't be 21 until his first training camp in the NFL. But I thought, you know, his combine wasn't bad. He actually, his three cone was under 7 seconds. You know, he's just a little bit of an awkward athlete with the way he runs, but he's straight line explosive. He catches everything. I think that's the thing that really kind of when you come away from watching his tape, he high points. He can scoop it off his shoelaces. He can catch outside his frame. He's very natural. And that's impressive considering, you know, he was at Canton McKinley. He was a safety primarily. And so it wasn't Bowling Green was one of those few options. And they said, hey, we're going to move you to tight end. That's our plan for you. And the last 3 years, he really developed and he's still developing. He's still a work of progress in several areas. But I think somewhere in the third round, the team's going to get a pretty good player.
Dane Brugler, it's the Beast, and it comes out on April 9th. This is the largest of all the Beasts he's ever authored. And the Beasts are a fantastic piece of writing that he does every year. Dane, we thank you very much for the time. Find him on Twitter, at DP Brugler. Dane, take care.
Anytime. Thanks, guys.
He's on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. It's Dane Brugler, 9 o'clock. Nathan Zagura going to join us on the show. Can I?
I love real draft guys, because I'm like, oh, in the middle of the season, Fannin, I heard first round buzz. And he's like, he said it in a very nice way, but he had to be rolling his eyes. He goes, he was never first round. He was third round.
He's not rolling his eyes at you. He's rolling his eyes at, because you're not saying that during the broadcast. I mean, you might have heard that. So you say it during the broadcast, but you're not sitting there yelling it. I think it's becoming harder than ever to kind of put guys in some of these spots. Tonus, a great guy once said, we're living in a world I don't understand when it comes to the Cleveland Cavaliers. More on that in just a moment. Folks, don't miss a moment from earlier in our show or any of our local shows on 92.3 The Fan. Click the rewind function on the free Odyssey app. It's brought to you by Montrose Kia. Choose, click, cruise at montrosekia.com to listen back to any of our segments from the past 72 hours. The tape is going around online, 92.3thefan.com. I call it a tape. I think it's Pam Anderson and Tommy Lee. The clip is going around online. You and I talking about the Cavs, 61-15. Some people, of course, are just reacting to it because they're stupid. Just saying, what do you mean? No. I'm complaining about the people kind of acting like this season is just whatever. At 61-15. But I said there's, and you and I broke it down, there's reasons for that. Let me get back to what Dane said here in a second. Let me get this off my chest. You and I said there's reasons for that. We are in a rings culture. Everything's ring, 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 ring. Championship, 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 championship. And when LeBron did it all, you had the player, hate to use the word generational, you had the player of the generation, arguably the greatest to ever do it. But during that time, it was LeBron versus Michael. And if you didn't get to the same level of championships, how could we call you the greatest ever if you can't get to the same level of championships, even though it's professional basketball and it's very hard? But you were punching your ticket every year, and you felt entitled to the finals. Let's be honest. I felt entitled to the finals that we got LeBron back every year. We made these trades. We got LeBron. We traded for Kevin Love.
And that's how the NBA worked for so many years.
I felt like I couldn't guarantee it because Golden State became a behemoth, but I was entitled to it. So everything they did was this incredible run, and I thought we'd never see it again. So here we're kind of sort of seeing it again, and I don't know if we know how to react, but there's also Boston at the end of the road too. And they're in the East. So I think it's turned into the last month, you're doing all these things, but now you're losing some games and you're going to run into Boston. Like, I ran into somebody downstairs and he shakes my hand. He goes, I think the discourse, his name's Lewis. He goes, Ken, I think the discourse did start with LeBron and Michael in the championships. And ever since then, we have questioned everybody else's greatness because they didn't have enough championships.
It's in every sport.
He's talking everybody as well. Everybody as well.
So can we fight back? Can we still say, yes, we obviously have expectations for the Cavs. We want them to go deep. We want them to beat Boston. We would love it if we got back to the finals without LeBron, won a championship, maybe won it over LeBron. How amazing would all of that be?
You're right.
But also separate that from, this has been an all-time pleasurable ride that we have been on in the regular season. And what happens next should not contaminate what happened previously. How can we accomplish that? Because you can't take away memories. I talked about the 95 Indians. They did not win. In fact, they even did a parade. They had a parade for finishing second, which you would think would be an all-time loser move and something I would make fun of. But you had to be there. You had to experience it. They were special. And the fact that they didn't win at all, and of course, we thought they'd be in it for the next decade. They weren't. But the fact that they didn't win at all did not tar any of, or mar, I should say, any of that we got to watch, all the walk-offs, all the amazing, thrilling moments with that team and the big names.
And it goes right with the Cinderella song. You don't know what you got till it's gone. We will not truly appreciate how special this season is until years down the line. We were stuck in the middle of all this.
Like
we
the 2017 season.
Like the 2017 season, like all of it. We were trying to win a championship, and now you look at the 90s Indians, and those guys don't pay for a drink in town. Well, one guy would, but he doesn't come back to town. But most of those guys don't pay for drinks in town. They don't have to. They're beloved. Don't care about any of the stories. I know Jeff had to cover them, and so he sees them differently than I've heard the media stories. But they were heroes to our generation. They do nothing. They want for nothing here. Same thing with the 80s Browns. I don't think you truly appreciate it until you go through suffering afterwards. I don't think you truly get that. And it sucks because, no, they are going to be an underdog against Boston. Probably a heavy one as well, depending on how the postseason goes. I mean, unless they go 8-0 leading up to it, I think they're going to be probably a heavy underdog to a lot of people. And if they don't get over that hump, I think there's going to be some really nasty reaction by some of the fans. And it sucks because it's going to make next regular season that much more quote-unquote meaningless. Because you've won all the games already. You've done all this. You're bound to have more losses. Having only 15 losses with six games left to go is not a normal thing. It's just like, man, that's why I get frustrated because I'm going, guys, yes, I am from here. And I want him to win, and I know that Lima's bedside manner isn't as good as mine, but he wants him to win too. That's not carrying water or homerism. That's knowing the perspective of how hard this is and how hard it's going to be and how we see these guys now in today's media and in today's NBA. And so, yeah, I have to take the good with some of the bad and understand that the bad isn't anywhere near as bad as what a lot of organizations are dealing with. 98% of other organizations are dealing with. 95. That's a big deal. Dane Brugler, who just joined us at 820. You can go back and hear that interview, 92.3thefan.com. There's one name, and I'm afraid to put the Maloik on him. He mentioned Ariante Irsay. I'm an offensive line guy. I watch, you know why I would watch a lot of Minnesota, do you not? Two reasons. One has to do with oars and water. The other one has to do with, obviously, my dynasty. Watched a lot of Minnesota. He's a big fella, and he looks like he should be a good athlete. I would steer clear of him. He reminds me of somebody else that is no longer playing tackle for the Cleveland Browns.
And who can't find a job in free agency.
He just got surgery.
Right, but
that's true.
This was a former first-round pick.
Yeah, that's true.
When do those guys
point.
Not get second opportunities?
That's a good point, yeah.
Number 10.
I think what?
Number 10 overall. He reminds me of number 10 overall. I don't want to say the name because I don't want to put the spot on him. I think he was sleeveless in a lot of the games I watched, but I have to go back and watch.
That is important.
But he mentioned that name, and I turned my mic off to Lima, and I mouth, no, absolutely not. No, no. And I just texted Dane. He's like, fair. Because I didn't want to start an argument over a second-round offensive tackle with Dane during the interview. We had a lot to do there. But, yeah, Ariante Irsay, Did you hear him talking about the quarterbacks as well? He says he wouldn't draft a quarterback here up high in this draft. He says there's possibilities. Tyler Shuck has been mentioned a bunch.
But Dane framed it in a very simple...
Dane did say he's a young guy. He's 26. But
yeah, he framed it, though, in a way that makes sense, I think, for a lot of people, at least the criticism. You might not agree with it. But he flat out said Shedeur Sanders, he doesn't think is a guy that elevates others. So therefore, not a number two overall pick. That's his logic. And you know, he talks to a bunch of people, and I'd like to think by now guys like Dane Brugler are pretty good at knowing who's telling him something to create chaos and who's telling him the truth.
But my problem is our media brethren. How many of our media brethren are saying take a quarterback? Remember, I have not given my opinion just yet on who exactly I want to take, but I thought they were going to take a quarterback just to take a quarterback. I felt that until I heard what Jimmy said earlier this week.
Not only did I think that, Kenny, I was urging that.
Do you? Okay, so you're the problem I'm talking about.
Yeah.
But you also don't seem to have a problem that Jimmy Haslam is going on all these trips. Do you have a problem that Jimmy Haslam is going on all these trips?
Not really.
Because if you're a person who says to take a quarterback just to take a quarterback, okay, that's what an owner would do. That's exactly what an owner would do. If you're one of the people who are saying don't take a quarterback because you can't just guarantee that guy's going to be it and you have to do what's right by the franchise, I also can't have a problem that Jimmy's going on these trips. I know you get nervous about an owner being on these trips because he might do what the fan doesn't want him to do. What you as the fan doesn't want him to do, you're afraid he's going to do that. But what would you do if you were the owner? Has Andrew Berry, who, if I'm the one paying the bill, you gave me the idea, would you trust Andrew Berry altogether? Would you trust Kevin Stefanski's judgment? Would you trust Paul's judgment altogether?
I imagine if, let's say after...
You can't tell me he doesn't question in the back of his mind. There's no way.
I imagine after 2020, the trust factor was probably at a 9.5 out of 10.
Yes.
There's no doubt it's not where it was, right? There's no doubt it's less at this stage.
And I think I'm the one who's the owner. The only thing that fans and the ownership ever have in common is that they're the ones left... The fans don't have to pay it, but they're the ones who are left giving their time to it. So if you're Jimmy Haslam and you're going out to all these things, you know what? I'm going to have dinner with the quarterback. I'm going to have dinner with this guy because I don't know what Andrew Berry's telling me. I don't know what his group is telling me. I don't know what Paul's telling me. I don't know what Paul says to anybody. I don't know what they're telling me. So I don't know. I'm going into this blind, me personally. But if they are gung-ho on the quarterback, I'm going to make sure. I'm going to make damn sure they're gung-ho on this quarterback and this guy's going to work out for us. Or if they're telling me, no, we can't take a quarterback in this draft, Kenny, Jimmy, and this is why, and they give me all these reasons, okay, but we are drafting at number two, and I have to make sure of this. So I have to go on these trips. So it just depends on the eye of the beholder. And you're the owner. You're stuck in the spot. There's going to be, I think there's right now, 55% of fans don't want to take a quarterback because they don't believe it's the right class. I do believe 45% are just like, take the quarterback. Just take the QB and move on. Well, half are you going to love it, half are you going to hate it coming up on April 24th.